Welcome to another new and great edition of Movie Madness. Really, thanks. Thank you, everyone. Simmer down. Okay. Really enhance the production values here. I'm actually all by myself. My guest, Dave Vaco, which I believe means cow in Spanish for my bilingual listeners. Rochester comic, who was supposed to be on to help me review 1917 and war movies in general, couldn't make it. He had his large penis support group meeting, and that really held him up. So it's just me, but we'll get through it, guys. I'm just going to talk about 1917. People love it. Did I love it? I don't know. I'll tell you in a minute. I'm teasing it. And we'll get to, obviously, the Oscars were announced, so we'll get to some of that. We'll get to the Oscar nominations, Oscar snubs, because everyone likes to whine about that. I'll make some of my predictions, my spot-on predictions. I believe I was 90% last year as a movie expert. But first, let's talk 1917. Which is a under war movie. Ooh, look at that. Number one at the box office. Finally dethroned Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Made $36.5 million. 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. Star Wars dropped down to number two still. I think that's close to $1 billion worldwide. So good for them. Although I think it still cost $500 million to make. You know, those movie executives are real good at cooking the books, so that somehow the movies never, I don't know, I feel like that's the best way to launder money, is make a movie, because you don't know who's getting paid and how much it really costs. But look at that, Jumanji, The Next Level, still in there with The Rock, a good body-switching movie. The Rock and little Kevin Hart made $14 million. Just Mercy made $10.2 million, and Like a Boss, rounding out the top five with the delightful Tiffany Haddish. That movie is at 19% on Rotten Tomatoes, so that's not good. And Rose Byrne. Who else is in there? Like a Boss. Since I'm all by myself, I also don't have my R&D. I have to be my own research person. That's always trouble. Actually, 64% for out of 872 ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 64%. So that's not awful. This is obviously not going to please the critics. But it's, 19% is kind of low, especially with such a cast. But Tiffany Haddish is experiencing probably what a lot of women in Hollywood experience. Well, like Melissa McCarthy specifically, and probably other women that I can't think of right this moment. But basically, she's, you know, very funny, very talented, but it's just finding the right vehicle, or just a good script, I guess. Just a good movie, because this is a all woman cast, basically, about two women entrepreneurs, her and Rose Byrne, and they have a small startup in cosmetics, and Selma Hayek is a I don't know what she plays in this. Basically, a Bill Gates type who wants to snatch up their company. So it's all women, basically. And Billy Porter, he's in there. We all know Billy, right? If you don't know Billy, you should just look him up. But it's not. And comedies have really suffered these days, I guess, straight up comedies, because they don't play. I think studios are just not willing to invest the money in anything big, right? Because you need a name just to open a movie. So I guess Tiffany's probably still working somewhat cheaply. But if it doesn't play over, comedy's not going to play well in China. I mean, I guess in foreign countries they don't mind reading because they're not all idiots like here in America because of, you know, I guess Parasite, which was nominated for Best Foreign Film, got a little, or not criticism, but people were like, hey, this is America. We don't go to the movies to read because we have to read subtitles, obviously, and that got a little blowback. But anyway, yeah, so yeah, if it's not big explosions or just cars racing submarines, people, it's not going to translate. So they're not going to spend a lot of money on comedy. So comedies have suffered all over the place, especially in movies, though. And I don't know who wrote this, but it's just trouble. I mean, it's probably, it was actually written by two men. So I don't know if they just shoehorned women in there or what. But yeah, it's comedy is it's a hard spot for comedy right now, all around. So hopefully one day, I know I did read some of the reviews, and Tiffany worked really, really hard to try to, you know, carry this movie. She's probably suffering from, I don't know, early Melissa McCarthy syndrome, where it just hurts from carrying the movie. You know, you just try so hard in every scene. It's sometimes it's a little rough. But I have faith one day she will either write her own thing or, you know, do something, or someone will give her the script that will really utilize her talents and she'll break through. Back to 1917, which is, you know, a war movie. 1917, obviously World War One, the prequel to World War Two, doesn't get as much hype because, you know, it's not as exciting, I guess, right? You know, I'm not, I went to Buffalo Public Schools, so my history has gaps in it, and I really can't speak about World War One, and I don't do any preparation for this podcast. Oh, it's a little more ambiguous, though, right? Like, World War Two, we could all get behind it eventually, right? I mean, although America did know they were killing tons of people in camps, we were like, that's fine. We got eventually, until they bombed us, and then we're like, oh, we must put an end to this. But enough of my libertarian views on America that I love desperately. But no, 1917, World War One's a little more ambiguous. I don't know. I know it was Germany. They're involved, right? It wasn't Nazi. I think it was just a douche, Colonel, or Van Helm, some dude with a really German-like name, just wanted to, I don't know, they assassinated some prince, blah, 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 nationalism. I don't know, if you read the reviews on it, it's really weird because you can definitely see the point of view of the people that are reviewing 1917, because if they're from, there's a couple reviews from British people from the UK, and they're definitely, when they're not complaining about the royal prince situation, the Mexit, as you will, their take is different because this movie's from the British, two British shoulders, soldiers' point of view. So they have a distinct point of view on that. And if someone's younger, they don't know anything about World War One. They're just like cinematography. And you could just see, or if they're a woman, you could just really see where someone's coming from when you read certain reviews. It's interesting. But it is 90% from the critics. But Sam Mendes, who co-wrote it and directed it, is somewhat of a, I don't know, I don't want to call him a darling of the Oscars, but, you know, I think he's well respected. Obviously, Megan Married in Beauty, classic movie with Kevin Spacey before he was revealed to be the monster that he is. But you can still appreciate the movie. You can still appreciate the performance. Just keep in mind that every young boy he came in contact with, he tried to molest, and no one stopped him. And who's responsible for that? Us? No one stopped him. He ran amok for 20 years because he was winning Oscars. Anyway, yeah, and this obviously has a lot of good, like, Benedict Cumberbatches in it. Like all British, there's little, small little roles for British actors, which is good, I guess. keeps them employed. Although there's way too many English actors right now in America just affecting American accents and stealing our acting jobs. But basically the story and the big deal was made, cinematography, one long shot. And you know what? It's not that great. And obviously it's not one long shot because they did have to eventually shoot the cameras. You know, if it was just like one long movie and they never stopped filming, boom, then I'd be impressed. Otherwise, fucking, I don't care. Oh, I mean, it's like the first 20 minutes, it's good. They're like walking through trenches and it's really on the front line. And you do get a sense of how horrible war in general is, right? And how horrible it must be. And, you know, just all that jazz, just like why isn't war illegal? It's just people sitting, just guys, nations sending people to sit in trenches and shoot at each other and try to take land. It's pretty weird. But after that, for me, it really wore, the cinematography wore off. And it just became another movie. And it was just, I wasn't sure what he was trying to say. And it hit all the, I mean, it's a well-made movie because Sam Mendes knows what he's doing. So it's hard to say, you know, I can't say that I didn't like it, but I can't say that I liked it. It was like when you go out to eat and you get a good, you go to a good restaurant and you get maybe not your favorite meal, but a meal that everyone likes. And you're like, well, that was good. And that satisfied me, but that's, you know, I'm not going to think about this meal tomorrow. Or I'm probably not going to tell a lot of people about it. It also hit a lot of war tropes. You know, Private Ryan hit, because they had these two corporals basically were just on a mission. They had to give a message because it's pre-cell phone. So the only way to give a message was to literally hand to it, to walk across front lines. And, and the obstacles that occur, the truck got stuck in mud. And he really needed to push it. But, you know, if you're from Buffalo, you understand that it's not that big of a deal. You'll get out. I mean, little things that tried to build up the drama that weren't dramatic. I don't know. I just maybe I'm jaded. But it's definitely well acted. And I guess maybe it's a spoiler alert. But at the end, you know, he had that. It almost mirrored Private Ryan, where he took out one of the protagonists, took out a picture and looked at his family. And I don't know if that's a spoiler. Spoiler, stop listening. But I mean, he didn't, you know, like Tom, well, that's where Tom Hanks died in Private Ryan, because he was just so tired, I guess. At least our protagonist here didn't die. He just looked at the photo of his family. So there, I don't know. I feel like maybe the movie was dedicated by Sam Mendes' grandfather. I guess he told stories because he was involved in World War One. So maybe he, you know, this was rummaging around Sam's head for a long time. And, but it's just, I think it just, when it's a war movie, it's easy to frame. Like, I feel like that's just the framing to tell a dramatic story and then sell it by saying how hard the cinematography was. And then he just put this movie together. But is it Oscar worthy? I don't know. I mean, it's a little derivative, and it's easy to be dramatic when the backdrop is World War One and there's constant threat of shooting and being killed. Not to say that's a cheat or anything, but, you know, kind of like a documentary style, like a sitcom, when you can look at the camera and break the fourth wall, it's a little easier to be funny. You know how Deadpool does it, or things of that nature. So, and I'm not sure what this movie is trying to say. I mean, if it has something, if it's just, I guess that's great art when it can be open for interpretation. So it's probably going to mean something different to everybody, but it's, you know, it's a well-told story, and it does, it's 110 minutes. So it doesn't seem very long. And, you know, if you are a fan of, there are some great shots in there. So I would go for that. And it seems like, I don't know, maybe it'll help people read about World War One. Shouldn't we talk about World War One more? And remember the lessons that we haven't learned, that we still are fucking up, you know, how we had World War II, World War III somewhere around the corner. It's still in production. It's still in pre-production. Some very talented people are really, really working on that, really working hard. But like they say, it's really hard to get it done, right? Get a movie made. Is it harder to start a war? I don't know. Some people are making it look easy. But I don't want to, this is definitely not an anti-war podcast. That's for sure. So, I don't know. I feel it's definitely not 90%. You know, critics are going to, I feel like anything Sam Mendes does and is going to get somewhat high praise, because it's just a joy to watch, especially when you have to watch so many horrible movies, you know, and a critic's going to be in a bad mood when he probably has to go see fucking Like a Boss, which is a horrible, horrible fail, I'm sure. And not a funny script, and then come and see this, and it's just like, whoo, much, you know, it's like getting out of your Toyota Escort, which is doesn't exist, I guess, but it would be a hell of a hybrid, right, if Toyota and Ford just merged one day, maybe in 2025, guys, when the economy really collapses. But until that, you know, when you get out of your Ford Escort, and then you just get into a Mercedes, and then you see... you know, you see the difference, and then you're just so happy to drive that because it's better. So I don't know. I would recommend it, I guess. You know, you should see it. It's on the list. So that's my review of 1917. And there's probably a couple things that will really bother you. You know, a great movie, they say, is what, like two great scenes and no bad scenes. And I don't know. I don't think 1917 quite qualifies for that, because maybe one great scene, but there's a couple of things that will really annoy you about this movie. And but maybe it will. It'll help you think about what the movie's trying to say, or at least remind you of the horrors of war, which won't be bad, right? Because that should, in my book, war should be illegal. Well, let's get on to 2020. Guys, so exciting. The Oscars are early this year. It's going to be the night. It's going to be a week after the Super Bowl. Man, that's going to be a week. February is looking up. February 2nd, Super Bowl. Obviously, the Buffalo Bills won't be involved, but two other fucking teams of highly qualified people will be in the Super Bowl. And then the week after, the Oscars. And, of course, again, hostless. They should just have, like, a computer. They should form a computer program. At least that would be a funny gimmick. Like a computer program called Host. Or like Clippy from Microsoft Word. That guy was kind of annoying, but sometimes he made me laugh. They could write some good jokes for him. I mean, I guess they really don't need a host. The show's still going to last three and a half hours. Way too long. And there's always going to be snubs, guys. I don't think, even with AI and how much they help us, there's still going to be... Someone's going to be left out, right? And it's okay to be left out. I mean, it's just going to happen. I mean, some things are egregious, sure. But, I mean, I get left out of things all the time. I mean, mostly because of my abrasive attitude. But people don't include me in things. But, I mean, when people don't invite me to parties, I always feel like they really like me the best. Because then they know that I really don't want to attend their party. So I feel actually... closer to that person when I find out that I didn't get invited to a party or some sort of soiree or a small meet and greet, whatever I get left out of. In the end, I actually feel better because I know that I wouldn't want to attend that thing in the first place. And I know I'm being facetious, because this is actually recognition from your peers, and who doesn't like that? But I mean, just do the work, and I feel like it will speak for itself in most cases, right? And then there's always things that get nominated that shouldn't. I mean, that's the nature of the unbearable lightness of being a human, right? Or people feel you get snubbed. But, of course, in a movie, The Joker led with 11 nominations. So that's the most nominated. And the big snub, of course, is there's no women directors. Totally shut out of that. And there's some fine... there's some fine direct, obviously a woman, there's some fine direction by many women, so I don't know. But I mean, was each film by a guy better than what a woman did? I don't know. That's not for me to say, because I'm not 100% sure. Scarlett Johansson had a really good year. I mean, I guess in total, I would say 2019 was the year of Keanu Reeves. But Scarlett Johansson, close second. She scored the rare double acting nomination for Best Actress and Supporting Actress. Best Actress in Marriage Story, which I talked about last week. And for Jojo Rabbit, another funny, hilarious take on Hitler and I think the Nazi camps of pre-World War II. She played the mother in that. And and the big snub also was Awkwafina, the Asian comedic actress who didn't get nominated for her work. But Cynthia Erivo was nominated for 2 awards, Best Actress and Original Song for Stand Up. Her song Stand Up, which was in the film Harriet Tubman, which thank God Julia Roberts turned down, and they got a black actress to play that. But let's see here. Here's a snub. Well, Best Picture, it's Ford versus Ferrari. A lot of money went into that, and a lot of good acting. So, that is, and The Irishman. So you need to put, I don't know, that is on Netflix. If anybody know, you want to steal a Netflix password, you do need to put aside a good 3 days to watch that. Jojo Rabbit, The Joker, Little Women, which is about women, right? It's a book, guys. Look it up. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So that's, my man Tarantino nominated again. And Marriage Story, which is Netflix movie, Adam Driver. Good drama in that and as well because a relationship falling apart is always a good frame for, for drama. And who can't relate? Because we've all had relationships fall apart. I would say 99% anyway. I don't know. This one's tough. Scorsese. I think the Joker is going to take it. It'll be a little controversial. That's my first vote. Little Women, definitely not. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Now, wouldn't that just kind of be totally meta, handjobby, since it's all about Hollywood? I really feel like... But I think The Irishman might be a dark horse candidate. Because, Scorsese's getting old, and they like to give it to people who have, a lifetime track record. Because, everything in life, the Oscars aren't fair and 100% subjective. I don't know if anybody needs to be reminded of that. But I'm gonna go with that on Best Picture. Actress in a supporting role, Kathy Bates for Richard Jewell. The Clint Eastwood movie where he, from 1992, Atlanta Olympic bombing. He really needs to clear, Clint Eastwood's gone a little nationalistic in his old age, as all old white people do. And he really wanted to clear Richard's name, who's now, he's been deceased for a while, but Kathy Bates is great in whatever she does. Laura Dern, Marriage Story. She was slimy lawyer. She played that part well. Scarlett Johansson, Jojo Rabbit. Florence Pugh for Little Women. I don't know who she played off the top of my head. There's 5 of them? I'll be full disclosure, did not read the book. I think I was supposed to read it in high school, and I totally blew it off. And Margot Robbie for Bombshell, the inside story of Fox News and sexual harassment going on there. And I don't know. That's a tough one too. Kathy Bates, Richard Jewell, Laura Dern, slimy lawyer, Jojo Rabbit, mom to a guy who's in Nazi camp. And of course Florence was great in she's having a good year as well though. She was great in the horror movies Summer Fall. and she was also in the wrestling movie. She had a really good year, though. But, Margot won last year for, I believe she won for playing White Trash Girl in Ice Skating Story. Laura Dern. I'm going to go with Laura Dern. She's going to win that one. Dark horse, though, is Florence Pugh. Let's say that. Actor in a supporting role. Oh, I love Tom Hanks in his own, playing Mr. Rogers as a supporting role. Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Anthony Hopkins, The Two Popes. Al Pacino, The Irishman. Joe Pesci, The Irishman. And Brad Pitt, Once a Time in a Hollywood. Once Upon a Time. It's also tough. We all know how much we love Tom Hanks. We're going to have to go with, They have to give Irishman some love. It's kind of how it falls. If Irishman doesn't win Best Picture, Al Pacino will definitely win there. Or Hollywood will show that it's really not anti-religious and possibly go to Anthony Hopkins. Dark horse. Foreign language film. Oh, this is all wrapped up. It's definitely Parasite. I'm not even going to mention the rest of these films because I am almost positive no one's seen them outside the Academy. Even people in the Academy haven't seen them. You know, they don't have to prove they watched every movie. One of the flaws in the voting right there. Documentary. You know, we'll cover that later. I'm going to continue. My Oscar show will continue on February 2nd, Super Bowl Sunday. Documentary feature. Nope. Original song. Nope. Here we go. Adapted. Screenplay. The Irishman. Jojo Rabbit. Little Women. The Two Popes. Joker. I feel like Jojo Rabbit will win that one. Who doesn't like a whimsical take on Hitler? We haven't had that since, what, Charlie Chaplin? Possibly The Irishman. Second vote. Original screenplay, Marriage Story, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, Knives Out, which is a new release, and then 1917. I feel like Marriage Story's got this one. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, maybe. Quentin Tarantino's become quite the insider. But I'll still call it my number two. Actor in a leading role, Antonio Banderas, Pain and Glory. Didn't even know he was in a movie this year. Good for him, though. Leonardo DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Adam Driver, Marriage Story. And, of course, Mr. Phoenix for the Joker. And, And Jonathan Pryce for The Two Popes, which is probably another movie that no one's seen. But I think The Joker's got this. Joaquin is my first guess. And Dark Horse is just Antonio Banderas because, again, no one's seen that movie, so I think the Academy likes to vote for people that they haven't seen because they get worried. And what else do I want to talk about? And actress. Cynthia Erivo, Harriet. Scarlett Johansson, Marriage Story. Cerezo Ronan, Little Women. Renee Zellweger, Judy. And Charlize Theron in Bombshell. You know, Hollywood loves a good biopic. I'm going to say Renee Zellweger and Judy. Dark horse, though, Cynthia Erivo for Harriet. Best director, Martin Scorsese for Irishman. Quentin Tarantino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Bong Joon-ho for Parasite. Sam Mendes for 1917. And Todd Phillips for Joker. This one's too tight to call. You know what? I'm gonna save that one for my February 2nd show. Of course, there's production design. Cinematography, I can tell you right now. 1917, definitely got it wrapped up. Also, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, The Irishman. They don't actually have, they should have a good category for CGI now and CGI effects or de-aging effects, because I feel that's the way the movie industry is going, but Irishman's not in that. And then Joker and possibly Lighthouse, because that was a movie that not a lot of people saw, but a dark horse candidate for cinematography. I will get to costume design next week. Sound editing, I feel like 1917 will probably take that one too. Maybe Star Wars. They like to throw in Rise of Skywalker is involved in that one. And animated short film. You guys haven't seen any of that. I still have to... I'm going to get busy on seeing those so I can make a good choice. And that's pretty much it for, the nominations that count, that anybody really cares about. As a comic myself, obviously a lot of people are upset that our man Adam Sandler did not get nominated. And, I think he's really okay. I mean, he gave a good performance, but he does, let's be honest, he has released a lot of bad performances. So should he be immediately... I know it does. It should be standalone, like one film, but it's really hard to erase everything from people's minds. So, I bet if he does it again, if he has another dramatic role, he'll get nominated. And Adam Sandler's doing fine. He, he's going to get disrespected anyway as a comedy actor and just as the type of person he is. I mean, he's still one of the funniest people on the planet, and he got fired from SNL because some studio exec didn't think he was funny. So that should tell you everything you need to know. And Lupita Nyong'o did not get nominated for Us, the horror movie. I don't know. I guess I don't have anything to say about that. I mean, I guess it's just a straight-up snub, right? I mean, Jordan Peele directed another great movie. And maybe they just want to, there's just not room for everybody. I don't know what's behind there. I don't know if it's driven by anything or they just felt like it was one blow. I mean, the performance is still in the top 10, right? But they just cut it down. So I don't know. And I do have, as much as I love J-Lo, she was not nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Hustlers. But I don't even think her performance was that. It was a good performance. And if you rate it on a sliding scale for Jennifer Lopez, who, a fair actress, but again, has done a lot of not great performances. So I think it's okay that, it probably stands out in a lot of people's heads because it's so good. But I think if you compare it to, say, just any other great actress, his performances, it's just okay. It's just really great for her, not in general. And I'm okay with her not being nominated. And again, she's also fine. And she got enough for it. And Robert De Niro. I guess, are we considering that a snub? The Irishman got a lot of nods, but he did not didn't get Best Actor nod. And he's a living legend. Probably some of it has to do with the repetitiveness of the roles. Again, it's another gangster. I mean, we've seen it many times. Casino, Goodfellas, Godfather, when he was in that one. Godfather 2, I believe. So, and he was de-aged, and he did a good job in that marathon of a movie, but it's okay. Again, I don't know. I can see it not being necessary. I do feel bad. Oh, and my boy Eddie Murphy, of course, who's having a slight... Although he did win an Oscar before, but they did not... Actually, Dolomite is my name. A good movie about a person who adopts a persona to make it in comedy. A underground... I don't know, blaxploitation adaptation expert or a legend, Rudy Ray Moore, rise to fame. Yeah, I mean, it's just a solid movie all around, but I don't know. I guess I don't know if I want to drop it on the lack of inclusion or maybe just mostly, I would assume most of the voters in the Academy, as much as they're trying to change it, are still older, skew older and white, and maybe just weren't aware of this movie because, as we all know, even if you do have the best product or if you're really good at something, if no one knows it, then really no one's going to realize it, right? I mean, some movies have gotten Harvey Weinstein, when he wasn't busy raping people, was good at pushing his movies and marketing them for an Oscar. I mean, they allegedly, you know, Hollywood lore says that Shakespeare in Love was due to his, I don't know if he raped his way, I don't know who he had to rape to get to that movie nominated and win, but I mean, he did a lot of pushing, and there's, you know, marketing techniques. Remember VHS, if anybody remembers those, which is obsolete now, but there was a thing called beta tapes, and those were actually better, allegedly. But now, due to marketing, everyone thought VHS was better. Or, you know, maybe a comedian that you find not so funny, but they're good at marketing. That's how it goes. So just convincing people of something is half the battle. So I'm gonna chalk it up to that. But yeah, Dolemite definitely deserved something, and Eddie Murphy too. That's more egregious than Uncut Gems, which is a good movie as well. Not to knock that. All right, guys. Well, I'm gonna leave it at that. Next week, I am excited though because Dr. Doolittle, the fourth incantation of it, with Robert Downey Jr., is coming out this week. Big release. So I'm gonna see that because who doesn't like a movie with talking animals? It's like YouTube come alive. Next week. Oh, and Bad Boys for Life is out. That is not shown for the. That's coming out the same day. What is this? The third one? Martin Lawrence is a little. I kind of feel like this is the last, like the last Lethal Weapon. Lethal Weapon 4. Sure. I mean, it's probably going to be fine. Is it going to be great? Is it going to be something you have to rush out to the theaters to see? No. Ooh, it's going to be 123 minutes too of runtime, written by three people that are credited. That means there's probably at least five people working on this. But it's not even, who's it directed by? Oh, it's directed by Ed Lee. As Michael Bay is out, then I'm out. I probably will see it eventually though. I'm sure it's fine. They probably had fun. And you can see that, but I feel like sometimes now that movies cost so much, there should still be a recognizable plot besides, you know, they're both getting older and Martin Lawrence definitely is going to play the Danny Glover role, as where he's definitely too old for this shit, even though he won't say that. But definitely see Doolittle over that. And I think that's the only really big movies coming out. But yeah, until then, I'll be back next week to talk about that and have some more Oscar chat. Till then, talk to you then.